another episode of the Nationals Review Podcast. My name is Colm, and I'm not here alone. I'm here with Charlie.
Colm, what's up?
We're back.
We're back.
We're back, and it's such, it's weird. We're back with such a different, I guess, standing.
Different team. Yeah, I mean, it feels a little different, doesn't it?
It does.
We basically recorded,
let's see what the date is here.
Did we record the night after they came back, the huge comeback?
April 30th, so almost a month ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was that game. Remember we said this could be the game that's changed everything around? I think we talked about it on the show. That
yep,
they had their breakout.
We were like, well, we saw a bunch of turnarounds in the past.
Right.
They don't always work.
Right. But apparently this one worked.
They turned it around.
And also, I mean, there's a, you had an interesting tweet today, I think a couple hours ago, about your – you made your All-Star selection. So I think on our next show we'll do our
– Yeah, that was just what I was feeling at the moment. But well, I do encourage everybody – see, the thing that bothers me about the All-Star voting is they come up with a ballot at the beginning of the year, and they're so rigid in it. And it's like Yunel Escobar is their second baseman.
Yeah, I hate – what is that?
And,
I don't understand.
Rendon is the third baseman.
Right.
And I voted for I did a write-in for Espinoza at second base, which,
wow,
by the way, if you go by, like, WAR and stuff like that,
mm-hmm,
he's legitimately up there. D. Gordon is the best second baseman,
yes,
in the NL this year, but I don't like D. Gordon.
You were also missing someone on the AL second baseman, which I'm shocked that you'd left him out.
I didn't put in Altuve.
Yes. That guy's the best player in baseball, in my opinion.
I love Altuve.
Oh, he's so good.
Who did I vote for at second base? I voted.
You had a good, I can't remember now, but it was someone that definitely is having a great season, too. I mean, he's no Altuve.
Well, I mean, that was just what I was feeling. I'm sure I'll change it. I think I had, I had Jason Kipnis.
Yes, he's having a great season.
I like Jason Kipnis.
Yeah, I do, too. Anyway, we're here. We're back. We are, I'll just talk about how many wins we have. We have now 27 wins, and we are 2.5 games ahead of the Mets, who are coming back to earth.
Yeah, a little bit.
But I'm drinking.
Oh, yeah. What?
What? Well, first of all, why don't you tell everyone about that news you told me today, which is pretty amazing for all the local listeners.
Oh, yeah. There's a new brewery opening up in the Rockville area, which is very close to where I live. So right. I'm pretty excited about that.
That's pretty awesome. But
I don't know too much about it. I just saw something on the news. But they are there. I think they're not doing, like, it's not going to be like a brew pub with food. I think
right.
It's just going to be like it's a brewery and there's going to be a tasting room or something like that.
Which is fine with me.
I'm going to have to try and taste it. It's called Seven Locks, like
Love
Seven
it.
Locks Road. Seven Locks, number seven locks.
Wow.
Brewing. So Colm and I will have to go check it out,
yes,
one of these days. I think they're supposed to open this summer.
We'll
have to go check it out,
them,
and we'll have to report back to you.
I'm writing down to contact them, so maybe we can do some cross promotion.
That sounds like a good idea. Maybe you can do their website. I don't know if they have one.
That's a
yet.
Great idea too. Anyway, I'm drinking since the weather has warmed up considerably. Thank God we're not in India, and to everyone out there, I hope you're doing okay. Did you hear about the weather temperatures in India today?
Yeah, I heard like 120 or something.
Yeah, almost 120. It was 117, I think, was it. But I'm back on Mike's Art Lemonade.
Oh, back on the summer brew for you.
Back on the summer brew. It's like that. It's transition. What about you?
I am drinking. I think I might have had this before when we did a show, but it's coincidental. I just bought this weekend. I've got the Flying Dog Bloodline, the Blood Orange
Ale. Oh, yes. That's a great one.
I like it. You know, I don't know if I can taste the orange per se, but I can taste the beer, and I like the beer.
My favorite Flying Dog is the Raging Bitch.
That is a very good beer. It's also like 8% alcohol.
Yes.
So if the first bottle isn't your favorite, the second probably is.
The second one always is my favorite for some reason. I never could place it. So anyway, we're here. The season is pretty much – teams have settled in. We now know who's doing what, I guess, on with teams. Positions are set, and things are going well.
With the league, you know, I actually just saw a stat. The Twins are second only to the Nats in best record in the month of May.
Are you kidding me?
And so I contest that we don't know what the hell's going on yet. But, I mean, like, you don't think the Twins are going to stay there.
No. What about, well, the best team in baseball, the most wins are the Houston Astros. Oh, no, they're tied with St. Louis. 29 yeah. wins.
And I wonder if the Astros are going to fall back to earth because while they have, you know, they have some young talent, I don't know. I don't buy them.
Their pitching yet. Has really been way better than I think anyone could have predicted.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah. That's really big.
Dallas Keuchel's, I think, leads the AL in WAR according to Baseball Reference. Wow. So,
but we're here to talk about the Nats. So why don't we talk about
Sorry,
the team?
Yeah, and by the way, Bryce Harper leads the NL and all of Major League Baseball in WAR.
Wow, unbelievable! He's finally what we all wanted him to be.
Yeah, let's get into this because the offense was dead when we last talked.
Dead,
and we said we basically talked about how most of these guys weren't hitting as well as they had their entire career. So we expected them to come back. But, you know, if you're sitting there watching the game as we're watching, which you won't be because this won't come out when the game's on, but if you think back to the night before's game and you go, oh, it was 1-1 in the seventh, and that's, you know, haven't scored runs in a few games, this team is first in the NL and runs scored.
How about that? Can you believe? I cannot believe the turnaround on that.
I mean, that's not. That just goes to show how good they've been because they were not even. I don't think. I think
top 20.
Well, no, in the NL.
Oh, NL.
I think they were like 10th or 11th.
Yeah, they were somewhere
scored.
In the middle. I remember.
It was like middle, but bottom half.
Right.
And that was, you know, 3 weeks in.
Wow.
And now a quarter of the season in, they're in first. They've scored more runs than any other team in the NL.
That's unbelievable. And even more than St. Louis, because all I know is they just score runs all the time.
Actually, the Dodgers are in second place.
Oh, that would make sense.
Yeah. The Dodgers are a little stacked. But, yeah, the Nats, runs per game, first place.
Right.
With 4.76.
Wow, and that's a great.
The second place team is actually right now Arizona.
Who, really?
Yeah, they score a lot of runs thanks to Paul Goldschmidt.
Paul Goldschmidt is amazing, yeah.
Apparently seven other players are on that team that helped it score.
Right.
Who's doing well on that team? Nobody. Yasmani Tomas.
Yeah.
He's doing well. The rest of the team's numbers are not that great. Oh, Mark Trumbo's hitting well.
Oh, yeah, he is. That's right.
Yeah, they don't have a good combination if you look at their lineup of people that are hitting well, but apparently they're scoring runs enough. A.J. Pollock is doing well, too. But, yeah, they can't pitch, so they're under 500. But because they're scoring enough runs, they're only a few games under 500. But it's Washington, then Arizona, then the Dodgers, then Colorado, who doesn't really count because of where they played, and then St. Louis is fifth.
Nice.
So, you know, doing well and led by Mr. Bryce Harper.
Wow. So you want to just get into him right now? Let me give you some stats on him right now. The man is batting currently. This is before tonight's game. .333. He has 41 RBIs, 16 make that now 17 home runs, 9 doubles, which I like that number right there. He has 50 hits, and here's another great number, which I want to get your opinion on this, 40 walks. Now, if you go to a single-season walk record, I think Barry Bonds will never be reached. That's 232 that he had.
Yeah, but I'd be curious how many of those were unintentional.
True.
I mean,
that is
Bonds
true.
Is still sort of the gold standard for understanding the strike zone, and even a lot of those were, you know, he probably still had, you know, well over 150 unintentional walks. It's hard to tell whether they were pitching around him.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's going to be one of the all-time seasons if he keeps this up in terms of walks.
Now, I'm looking at the records of total season. And in the modern era, I guess the next highest is Mark McGwire, who had 162. Do you think that number's even reachable?
I mean, that'd be even tough, I think, for him.
Yeah, I think so, too. I see him more around the 130
Although,
mark.
I don't have any proof or any – well, I'm sure you could go find this if you spent the time. Mm-hmm. I would guess power hitters mm-hmm. that are hitting for high averages, mm-hmm. the deeper in the season they go, their walk rates improve because pitchers
oh,
are less,
yeah, totally.
Less
right,
inclined
right.
to pitch to them. So
right. Well, there's, he's showing that if you pitch him – and you make a mistake, he's going to exploit you immediately. Right.
Right. Right. And essentially, you think of it this way. He's a quarter of the way through the season.
Yep.
He has 40 walks.
Right.
So he's on pace for about 160 walks. But you would think it would be more if he kept up this exact rate because wow. they would throw him less to hit.
Now you're but talking about the top five then. Would that not, if the way it's projecting, that would be top five all time in history.
Yeah, but I don't
see it
this
yeah.
well. He's leading the league, Colm, in home runs, in walks, in on-base percentage, in slugging, in OPS, OPS plus, in total bases. His slugging is 727.
Oh, my gosh.
His OPS after this
his home OPS run tonight, is ridiculous. I mean, can't believe it.
After this home run tonight, his OPS is over 1.2.
I mean, is that unheard of? Like, I don't understand.
His OPS plus is going into tonight is 224.
God.
So, I mean, that's, you know.
So, can we discuss a possibility of a triple crown here?
You know, he's not leading the league in RBIs. He'll be contending for it. He might not. He's, as well as he's hitting, I don't think anybody expects him to ever lead the league in batting average.
Right.
That's although his batting average has been great. But right. no, I don't know if he's a triple crown winner. More importantly, mm-hmm. if he keeps this up or approaches keeping this up, mm-hmm. we can discuss an MVP award.
True. Very true.
And I'd rather him win that than any sort of triple crown. I mean, I don't care about a triple crown. No. I care about an MVP.
Yeah, and a ring. That's all I care about.
Yes, and a ring.
So, I mean, I just love watching him. It's like every time now he comes up to the plate, it's like, okay, is he going to hit a home run? Because it's just like absurd. I mean, he went through that stretch since last time we podcast where, what is it, he hit 6 home runs in 3 games?
So, I read an article about him. I think 6-3 is...
Right.
It might have been 5-3.
Might have been 5-3, somewhere around there.
But I read an article that he basically said that he is now picking... He's so locked in that he's essentially picking spots and pitches.
Wow.
And so he's like, I'm guessing it's going to be outside, or I'm looking for something outside and a fastball and a breaking ball.
Wow.
And if he gets it, he destroys it. And if he doesn't, he'll lay off of it or he'll still like the pitch and he probably won't hit a home run with it, but he'll do something with it. And I think it's a combination of he's able to do that. A lot of hitters would like to be able to do that. He's able to do that because I think he really is like the term a student of the game. You know, I think he studies for this stuff. He studies pitchers.
Really?
I think he's very smart about baseball. He's always been. And I think he studies pitchers, and he mm-hmm. figures out what their tendencies are, or he tries to.
Right.
And because of that, he's able to, you know, at least have an idea of what they might be throwing. And then on top of that, he's so incredibly talented
right.
that he can take a pitch that he thinks is going and do something, you know, that he thinks is going somewhere and do more with it than other people can.
Now,
and that combination has just made him, I mean, it's a breakout year by any stretch. So we talked about right now his OPS plus is 224. It's actually higher after tonight's home run.
Wow. Yeah.
Bonds had those 4 seasons between 01 and 04 where he was the greatest player in
ever.
The history of baseball.
Right.
He never had an OPS plus higher than, other than those 4 years.
Uh-huh.
Throw those 4 years out. His highest OPS plus was his last year with Pittsburgh was 204, and his first year with San Francisco was 206.
Wow.
And so if Harper is basically doing better relative to the rest of the league and OPS mm-hmm. than any year Bonds ever had except for those 4 years where he was just
of Superhuman.
Were the four, the last four of his MVPs.
Right. Now, you know what is even better about Bryce is that he made a tweet today that just shows me why I even love him even more. Because not only is he incredible at the game, but it shows how much he loves the game because he wrote, and I quote, "My rain better go away face," and then he had a picture, "want to play at Wrigley tonight. Help us out, baseball gods." It just shows you, like, he respects that he's playing at Wrigley. He wants to go out there, and then he goes out here tonight and hits a home run.
What a jerk.
It's amazing. What a jerk.
I don't understand. I mean, look, I get the reason that people don't like him from, like, the... From, I don't know, from when he was in the minors and he, like, blew a kiss at somebody that blew a kiss at him earlier. Yeah. And he's really good and he's always known he's really good. Mm-hmm. He's such a fan of baseball. Like,
right.
He is so fun to watch and he enjoys what he's doing. And he's not disrespecting the game in any way at the major league level. In fact, he's showing it a lot of respect. Like, I don't know how you can't like him.
I don't understand it at all.
And if he was on another team, I would like him a lot. And if he was on a rival team, I would still like him. Like, I like Giancarlo Stanton.
Yeah, I love him.
He's so awesome.
Awesome.
I love watching him play.
I like Mike Trout.
I don't want him to do anything against the Nats or in competition with the Nats. By the way, Denard Span, home run king.
Let's talk about that, too. Denard Span came back since we last talked, too. And I think has really helped being back in that lineup.
In case you're wondering, Coleman and I just watched Span hit his home run.
Yeah.
Right. Against the Cubs. Two games in a row with a home run.
Right. And he's hitting for high average. His on base could be a little higher. He could take a little bit more.
It's not bad,
walks.
Though. I mean,
it's not bad.
250 plus is pretty good.
True.
That slugging of 513 plus, which is going to be more after that home run, that's not going to stay. But,
right.
I mean, he's been great. He's been a big part of why this offense has done so well. I think he could get all-star votes, even though he was out. He's hitting that well.
I agree with you 100%.
It's hard in the outfield because you're competing against guys with 15 home runs.
Right.
But he's been so good.
So good. I mean, it's just like you have him at the top of the lineup and you're hoping, okay, Span get on because then Harper's coming up fourth. I mean, the man has that word to say. He already has 21 runs, and he only has 117 at-bats.
He's been great. And I apologize for the transition, Colm. I just got so excited.
No, I understand. No, that's why I wanted to go exactly to him, because I think he has been a huge spark. But I know someone you want to talk about that we both – first of all, he switched sides of the plate, which he wasn't going to do. They didn't think he was even going to play second base. And now how can we get him out of second base?
My favorite – he might be my favorite player on the Nats, other than Harper. You know, like everybody. How can you not love Harper? But I love Danny Espinosa.
He's playing great. He really is.
I loved him in the past as a guy that you went, everybody hated him, and I went, they're not using him right. He can hit lefties, and he can field as good as anybody.
And he takes walks. Second on the team right now in walks.
So the thing that's amazing about him, and his OPS has gone down. It was at like 850 a week ago, and he's been in a bit of a slump, and it's down around 800 right now. But what's amazing to me is he's had about a fifth of his at-bats against lefties. And he's doing great, as he always does.
Right.
But the other four-fifths are against righties, and he's doing exactly what you would think he could do if he ever figured it out. The power is probably a little high. He's probably not quite a 450 slugging guy against righties. Mm-hmm. But he's hitting like just below 230. But his on base is almost – just above 340.
Which
and then he's
great.
Slugging 50. And like if you told me what's the ideal Danny Espinosa against righties if he ever figures it out, I would say like, I don't know, 220, 330, 400.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
That's if he ever figures it out. That's what he does against righties. And then against lefties, in the other 20 to 25% of his at-bats, it would be much better because it always has been much better. And that makes him an overall good middle infielder.
That's
and
true.
Instead, he's just been killing righties. How sustainable that is, I don't know. But, you know, they've talked about what he did. He shortened up his swing. And he basically You know, he always had a really long swing, and that was part of the reason why he struck out so much. Mm-hmm. But he shortened up his swing, and so now against righties, he's walking still, and he's still striking out a good amount, but not a crazy amount anymore.
No, right, correct. Not a crazy amount. That's the difference, yeah.
And so what that does is that allows him to be, like, a pretty good hitter against righties. You know, if he – it's interesting because I was looking up his numbers. He's got around an 800 OPS. Mm-hmm. For all the people that played shortstop last year, the guys with, let's say, I don't know, let's put it at 200 plate appearances in all of baseball as shortstops last year.
Okay.
The guys with an OPS over 800, there's like five or six of them.
Really?
That's it.
Wow.
And so, you know, he's probably not going to have an OPS over 800 all year. But what it does is it makes him not only a good shortstop, it makes him like borderline very good. I mean,
that's true, yeah.
So I have the list in front of me right now.
Right.
So let's talk about shortstop because that's where he – well, actually, do you want to start with shortstop or second base?
No, do shortstop, then second base.
All right. Yeah. So last year,
okay,
there were four guys in all of baseball with 250 plate appearances or more, mm-hmm, that had a 750 OPS or higher. Okay. 750 or higher. There were four guys. It was Tulowitzki, Danny Santana on the Twins, Johnny Peralta, and Starlin Castro.
Wow.
The next guy down was Ian Desmond.
Desmond, right.
You only, to get to the number 700, to have a 700 OPS, mm-hmm, that was Eric Ibar at 12th. That means,
really,
that Danny Espinosa right now is the, would it be, if you stuck him into last year's season, would have been the third best hitting shortstop.
Wow. That's crazy.
Obviously, we think the number's going to go down, but even if it goes down to 700, he would have been the 12th best in all of baseball. You're talking about 36 guys that qualified for that many,
wow,
plate appearances. Now, if you go over to second base,
yeah,
and do the same thing, there were three guys with an OPS over 800 and five with an OPS over 750.
Wow.
It was Cano, Altuve, Neil Walker on Pittsburgh, Brian Dozier on the Twins, and Scooter Gennett.
Huh.
And then if you go down again to 700, D. Gordon had 704, and he ranked 13th. And so, essentially, a 700 OPS makes you one of the top 25 middle infielders in all of baseball.
Wow.
A 700 OPS. That's how depressed hitting is.
Yeah.
In
baseball right now.
In baseball today, right.
Right.
So a 700 OPS makes you a top 25. You figure there are 60 starters, but in general there's more than 60 starters. It's more like 80.
Right.
So that puts you in the, you know, top half at least. A 750 OPS puts you in like the top 10 or 15. So is Espinosa good enough for a 750 OPS? I never would have thought that before.
I wouldn't even.
But if he is, he's a borderline all-star.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, he'll never get it because his batting average probably won't be high.
And the ballot is messed up.
Well, I don't mean this year, but let's say, well, let's talk about what this means for next year.
Yeah, what does this mean next year? Because if we go to who's now filling in for Rendon, I mean, look at what he's doing, too. So what happens there?
Well, what happens this year is an interesting question because when Rendon comes back and supposedly he's taking, you know, he's fielding and taking practice, you know, doing drills and stuff.
Right, right.
When he comes back, he's obviously going in the starting lineup.
Right.
So do you sit Espinosa or do you sit Escobar?
I see. I don't know. That is a hard question.
I'm guessing they will sit Escobar but give Espinosa chances to play.
Okay.
And give Desmond more days off. And
oh, that's true.
And ease Rendon in.
Now, am I crazy to think I'd rather have Espinosa play short and Escobar play second? Is that crazy thinking? Because of,
well,
like,
are you saying next year when, if assuming Desmond's gone?
Well, yeah, next year. Is that crazy?
So that's actually my thought.
Yeah.
Too, and the reason is not, look, Escobar was always a decent shortstop. He wasn't super rangy, but he was very shorthanded. Espinosa isn't super rangy either, but he's shorthanded. But he's,
yes,
younger. He's quite,
right,
a bit younger.
Right.
my guess is if you did the like statistical analysis of the two, it would make more sense to have Espinoza at shortstop. The question is, how comfortable is Escobar at second? Because there's been talk that he hasn't been comfortable there.
Interesting. That's interesting.
Another possibility is you keep Escobar at third. You play Espinoza at shortstop.
Oh, and Rendon at second. That's interesting, too. I like that.
Yeah, but I think what Espinoza is essentially doing right now is in auditioning for a starting role in the middle infield for next year. Because what they're going to do, assuming they don't trade like Wilmer, Defoe, and they get Trey Turner and he's fine, like these guys are coming up.
Yeah.
Maybe by the end of next year with Defoe.
Wow.
And so you need a stopgap. And if Espinoza can do that without you having to go and spend money on somebody, you're all for it. Right.
Right. Yeah. You, I mean, with the stats you just read to me where he's basically a top 10 middle infielder.
Right. Now, we have to see if this from the right-handed side. He's always been a top 10 middle infielder against left-handed pitching.
Right. Correct.
We've got to see if this stays.
Right.
If what he's done against righties can continue, and it won't continue as well, but Colm, if he has a 700 OPS against righties.
I'll take it.
And an 800 against lefties, which is what he's had all his career, and he ends up with a 720, 725 OPS as an overall season, again, that's a top 10 second baseman. That's a top 10 shortstop.
Wow. Ian Desmond, he could have signed that contract.
You know, I love Ian Desmond.
I love him too, but he's really just not doing it right now.
And it will pain me to watch him on another team.
Well, no, it won't, because he'll have a Yankee hat on.
No, it will pain me. I don't know, because they traded for a guy that I think he'll be.
Do you think Didi's going to stay there?
I think so.
Really? I could totally see Ian Desmond on the Yankees.
I don't know if they'll sign him.
Interesting.
But it's going to bother me. It's going to pain me to see him in another hat as he starts his fade, because it's going to be quick and it's going to be painful.
Yes.
He's never been super rangy. He's never been that great of a defender. He's always been an adequate defender. And at some point, he's going to be a bad fielding shortstop.
Yep.
And he's never been able to take pitches.
I cannot stand every time he swings at the first pitch. It drives me insane when he swings
at the first pitch. The reason he swings at the first pitch is because his numbers are pretty awesome on first pitches.
Because he always swings at it.
Yeah, I mean,
he has too many strikeouts this year. It's ridiculous.
Well, he's had a bad month, but a bad start, but he's hitting well again. And
true.
Desmond is like the definition of a streaky player, right? And so all we hope for with Desmond is he gets on a hot streak in October.
Exactly. That's all that matters. That's all that matters.
And because if he gets on... Desmond is one of those guys that when he gets on a hot streak, he can hit 500 over the course of 2 weeks.
So true.
So you just hope it happens at the right time.
Right. So before we go into pitching, let's finish out some other hitters here. Let's talk about our catcher and how he's healthy and he's amazing.
He's so good.
Oh, my gosh. He finished, I believe, a 19-game hitting streak. I believe it's been the best so far in 2015 of any player. And, I mean, and when he's not in, we have, I think, possibly one of the best backups defensively, not offensively, but in Lobatone.
Yeah, I like Lobatone as a backup. I mean, Ramos, the thing about Ramos is, like, he's like a poor man in some ways. Offensively, he's a poor man's Ivan Rodriguez. And
yeah.
I'm not gonna say he's anywhere near as good, but the thing is, he's one of those people that can hit around 300. Now, Pudge hit like 320,
yeah,
but
Pudge
he was also in a very – it was in an inflative offensive era. So I don't know what that would translate – a Pudge in his prime, what that would translate to today. It would probably still be over 300. But anyway, Ramos and him both never saw a pitch they didn't like, right? I mean, Ramos is never going to walk. But he's hitting the ball. He had that hitting streak. He's finally starting to show some power again, which he didn't have at the beginning of the year for whatever reason.
Right.
And, again, his numbers don't look spectacular until you compare them to all the other catchers in baseball.
He's got to be number one in the NL.
Well, no, that's
oh, Buster Posey. Yeah. Totally forgot about that guy.
Yeah, that guy. Posey's good.
MVP. Forgot about him.
Well, let's take a look. Home, I got my computer.
Yeah, I would love for you to tell me because, I mean, average-wise, he's got to be in the top three, right?
Yeah, he's hitting 285 right now.
Okay.
So that's top – let's see. I'm pulling it up right now. So in terms of OPS, it's not great.
Yeah, do it by that.
OPS, he's kind of low.
700, around 700? Is that what
it is? Yeah. So I was wrong about that. But
– which is weird. Sorry. Is that because he's just not walking? Is that mostly the main reason?
Yeah, he's not walking. Yeah. It's taking a minute to pull up because I was looking at 2014 stats.
Well, right.
But he is, you know, the thing that I like about him is I really think in terms of framing, he's doing a good job. And I looked this up. I had a debate with somebody because they were saying, I said, he must be good at framing. And they said, no, he's not on Twitter.
Really?
And I said, well, let me look at the numbers. And I looked at the numbers and he's been slightly above average the last two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2013, he was very good. So, you know, what that means, I don't know. One of the problems with Ramos is he hasn't played enough, it seems like. Every year he gets hurt, right?
Right.
So I feel like if he's healthy at the end of this year, we'll have a good idea of what kind of defensive sort of, you know, he's got a good arm. But in terms of what kind of defensive framing,
right?
Those stats are we'll find that out,
right?
But I don't know. Do you get the impression that he's good at it? I get the impression that he's really good at framing,
yeah,
and that he's really good at not letting balls get by.
Yeah, he's really good at that. He is great at knocking that ball right down.
Maybe not the best caught stealing guy, but good.
But good. Decent. Yeah.
So I think you have a strong, let's say, above-average defensive catcher. Not right. Spectacular defensive catcher, but above-average defensive catcher. And then you throw in the ability to hit, and you go, all right, well, he's pretty amazing.
Right.
So in terms of OPS, he's actually – he's not in the top 10 in all of baseball.
Right.
But in terms of WAR, he is.
Right, exactly. I can see that.
He's like, you know, kind of on the borderline of being an above average hitter, and this year his numbers defensively make him above average. And so all of that together make him, he's got the seventh best WAR according to ESPN.
Wow. And he's healthy is my favorite stat on him. He's 137 at bats already.
His big crutch will always be his on base. And so he's got to hit.
Yeah.
He's got to hit a lot.
He's got to hit because he's not going to walk.
But, again, we're talking about a catcher. And once you get outside of Posey and Russell Martin and Salvador Perez and Derek Norris, who's not been a good defensive catcher.
Former Nat.
Once you get outside of that group, the offensive numbers drop off quick.
Right.
And so you kind of get – yeah, Ramos isn't top three or four, and maybe he's not an all-star guy, but, like, outside of the group of potential starting all-star catchers, It goes down really fast. And so for Ramos to be right outside of that group but not in the falling off the cliff side, I'm so happy that he's healthy and that he's able to do this and that he's, you know, a five on a scouting scale, even if he's not a seven.
Right.
He's an easy five, and maybe some years he'll be a six.
Right.
So, I don't know. I'm happy for him. I'm happy that he's healthy. The guy went through so much.
So much.
And he's fun to watch.
Right.
And I still say he's a good framer, and we'll see what the numbers say at the end of the year.
Right, exactly. We have to wait for that. So let's switch over, speaking of framing, to pitching. Let's do some positive first. Max Scherzer, can we talk about this man? Can we talk about man is 5-3, a 1.67 ERA, and a .88 WHIP.
He does lead NL pitchers in FWAR.
Really?
Fangraphs WAR. I don't know where he stacks up on everywhere else, but I did see that stat.
All I have to say is, as advertised. Unbelievable.
Better than advertised.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, he's worth all the money to me. When he goes out, I want to see him pitch, and I just love the offense. Seems to just really turn it on now when he's on.
Yeah, he had some trouble at the beginning of the year, and he run support, and they've looked good behind him. Maybe that was because they couldn't hit at the beginning of the year, and now they can.
And he's 72 strikeouts. That's so great.
Yeah, he's averaging 10 strikeouts per nine.
Wow. So then we go on from there. Let's talk about someone who I don't think would be as good as he's doing in my – well, no, that's not true. I just didn't think he'd be as good as he is right now is Gio. I think he's been playing great.
Yeah, Gio's good. And it's exciting for me because, as I like to remind people, that's probably your number three starter next year.
Yeah.
Get on board the Gio train.
Right.
Because, I mean, the starters next year are going to be Scherzer and Strasburg, and then Gio. Roark.
Right.
And I don't know who the fifth
is. How about Roark, by the way, pitching Tuesday? Yes, yesterday. And he looked great. He looked great.
I mean, I don't know what else they should do. Gio's ERA isn't great, but he's done really well the last few starts.
Right.
And he looks like he's gotten it together. And I don't know. I mean, unless Strasburg has a real issue and they need to sit him or, you know, Pfister's coming back soon, I don't see Roark starting a lot. So it almost seems like a waste.
I know. It really does. It's like almost like he's waiting for next year.
Yeah, that's such a waste. Yeah. But I'm excited for him to pitch anytime he pitches.
And Jordan Zimmermann he started off really bad, but I think he has really turned it around now.
He's definitely put it together, and he looks like his old self again.
So let's talk about the two that I'm worried about.
All right.
I'm worried about Pfister. I'm worried that he's hurt bad.
Well, I mean, he's on the DL, so all you can do is hope that he was hurt. Uh-huh. And there's nothing else we can really speculate on it. He was clearly hurt because he went on the DL.
Right.
And hopefully that's coming back.
Right. And then, now tell me, I mean, you wrote an article. You can all check it out on nationalsreview.com about Mr. Strasburg.
Yeah. So
what's going on?
Basically. Do you want to talk about what's going on with him or what had happened with him?
Both, actually. So let's see what had happened first.
All right, so basically the article I wrote was, while everybody was whining and complaining about how Strasburg was not an ace and how he couldn't go far into games and all this stuff,
right,
he was basically like within the top 15 pitchers in all of baseball from 2012 to 2014.
Really?
Which, to me, when people argue what's an ace and what's not an ace, they either go, every team's number one starter is an ace,
mm-hmm,
or they go, no, there aren't 30 aces in the league. There's something like 15 to 20 aces. Well, he was a top 15 pitcher, so that's like an ace.
An ace stats, right. Scherzer's in there, right? He's definitely in the top
15. Oh, yeah. And actually, if you look at Strasburg's, if you look at the guys who are in the top, in ERA and in WAR and FIP and stuff like that, it's actually Strasburg and Scherzer and Zimmermann.
Interesting.
But we all know that Zimmermann's been great over the last few years, too, but it's almost like because Zimmermann's been so great and because everybody expected Strasburg to be the greatest pitcher of all time,
right,
they don't appreciate the fact that he was one of the best pitchers in baseball for the last three seasons.
Right.
Like literally one of the best 15 pitchers in baseball for the last three seasons.
Wow.
And all people are doing is whining about how he's not an ace. Well, guess what? Now he's not. So I hope you're happy.
Right, exactly. Even though he is.
Yeah, I mean, so he's, well, now he's, this year he's not. He's been terrible.
This year he's not. So let me give you some stats here to roll first. He currently has a 6.5 ERA.
Which may be the worst among qualified starters.
Yeah, that's possible. He is 3-5. He really hasn't had any of the run support. And he only has 45 strikeouts, which is the real shocking for me. So what is going on with Strasburg now?
Well, so obviously he sucks, which is all the stuff you outlined. But yes. I guess the question is why.
Yeah, why?
You know, I don't know why. There was talk. There's been a few articles about this. There was talk that he had an ankle injury that he was compensating for, but that was like 2 weeks ago, and they're like, well, it doesn't bother him anymore, and he's throwing fine in bullpen sessions.
Okay.
So it's just during games. I saw another thing that said his numbers were relatively similar batter per batter when nobody was on base as opposed to when there were runners on. So then you go, was there an issue from the stretch?
Right.
Is he speeding up his delivery when runners are on and he's doing something wrong? Or is it just really, really mental? Bad luck. He's not. He's doing. So there was actually. I listened to Baseball Prospectus has a podcast called Effectively Wild, and they actually talked about Strasburg for half the episode. Wow. I think yesterday
I'm
or 2 days
check that
ago.
Out.
Yeah, you should check it out. And they basically one of the guys' conclusions was they think it might just be really clustered bad luck. Like he's not doing anything terrible. I kind of. Get some because his velocity's not down.
No, it's not.
He's not walking anybody. Actually, the guy they compared him to, which was kind of funny because it's true, is he's like Phil Hughes. He's throwing strikes. He's not walking people. They're just hitting it.
Right.
He's actually walking fewer people than he used to do.
Yeah, he only has 13 walks on the season. I mean, it's not.
And,
the strikeout turtle is really scares me because this is a guy. He should be up there in the 70s.
Yeah.
And he's, like, behind Gio in strikeouts.
Yeah, he's not striking people out because they're hitting everything.
Right.
Now.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, we just watched the Nets get walked off. So sad.
Yeah.
So there's a guy who has written some stuff for the Washington Post, and he's does, like, Citizens of Nats Town and some other blogs. His name's James O'Hara.
Right, yes.
He's at Next Year DC.
Mm-hmm.
On Twitter, and he showed a heat map of Strasburg's fastball locations.
Right.
And if you look at 2014, it's in the middle of the plate, but it's like all around it too.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2015, it's so concentrated in like the exact middle of the plate that it's almost like he's throwing too many strikes.
Oh, so he's not positioning it better outside the zone. And
yeah, and so, you know,
just trying to overpower, I guess.
So there's a couple of things there. To me, one is if his off-speed stuff, like his curveball and his changeup aren't doing well,
mm-hmm.
then what does that mean? It means that probably hitters are recognizing it and they're not swinging at it. And so what that means is they're looking for a 96-mile-an-hour fastball, which 96-mile-an-hour fastballs are hittable if
you make contact.
Well, if Boom. Players are looking for it and yeah. they aren't fooled by the speed. You know, sometimes somebody throws 92 and it looks like 102. But
right.
Major League Baseball players can hit a 96-mile-an-hour fastball if they know it's coming.
Right.
And so if they're looking for that fastball, they can hit that. On top of that, you know, is he not painting the corners as well? Maybe. You wonder if there's some room for him to even lose a mile per hour or two and refine his command.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, there's also been talk that, look, he already lost a mile an hour or two when he came back from Tommy John and they said, you know, tone it down a little bit. And so if he's sort of voluntarily not throwing at 100% in order to have a little bit more command and to save his arm a little bit.
I'm all for that.
Well, if he's already doing that, then I don't know.
Oh, if he's already doing that, then I know.
Then I don't know if he can do it anymore and improve his command anymore. So I don't know what's going on. I don't have a real solution. I think the good thing is there are some really smart baseball people.
Right.
Who look at him and say, he's had some bad luck and he's made some bad pitches and there's no doubt he's been terrible, but this is the same pitcher and we don't really see him being this bad
okay.
for the rest of the season.
Good.
Now, there's also a chance that there's something really wrong, and we don't know what it is yet.
Right. That's the thing that scares me the most.
Well, that scares me, but it's like if they at least it's, you know, at least
explainable.
It's May.
Yeah.
Well, at least it's May. Like, let's figure that out. If the, what worries me is that McCaddy says there's nothing wrong when they pitch him in bullpen sessions. Mm-hmm. Well, okay. You're the pitching coach, and you're watching him pitch all game. What's the difference? What's he doing wrong during the game?
Right.
So,
okay,
all
well,
I know
let's
is,
just hope the luck changes then.
All I know is he was awesome, and now he's not. And if you were complaining about how he wasn't before, you missed it.
Right.
Because he was awesome.
So let's go. Before we get out of here, let's talk about one more guy, and that is the best closer in baseball, Mr. Drew Storen. Tell us about him.
Best closer in baseball.
Yep.
So far this year,
almost automatic now when he's on the mound for us, which is something that we've hoped that would happen, and it did. He's awesome.
Yeah, I mean he's been great basically since he came back from being sent down to the minors to tweak his delivery. He leads the league in saves.
Yeah, with 15.
He's got an ERA under 1.
0.89.
He's got an 11.5 strikeout per 9.
Wow, that's the best part right there. Love that.
Yeah, he's been great. I mean, you can say what you want about him in the postseason. And
right,
there's
terrible
really,
year, right.
Well, there's really no response until he does it again in the postseason and has a chance to win in the postseason. There's no rebuttal. We just go, okay, I guess he was bad in the postseason. But right. I don't think there's any doubt at this point that he's going to get you what you need to get to the postseason in terms of a closer. He's just been spectacular, and he's not every save has been lights out. Every batter gets out immediately, but he's gotten every save he's needed to get, pretty much. And I don't know. I guess there aren't that many Mariano Riveras out there, right?
Right.
Unless you have Craig Kimbrel, you can't expect your. There's just people expect every closer to be Mariano Rivera or Craig Kimbrel,
right?
And for 25 teams each year. Well, it's more like for 5 teams each year they might have a guy like that, and for 20 teams they have a guy like. Kind of like what Storen does, which is good most of the time, but still lets people on base. And then there's another 5 teams that can't find a closer.
Right.
But Storen seems to be even towards the this year, at least towards the front of that pack, and maybe is one of those 5 guys that, you know, is going to get everybody out most of the time.
So great.
I don't think he'll ever be like that, what we saw Kimbrel do the last few years, which is guys weren't even getting on base.
Yeah,
but he's still an all-star caliber closer now.
I agree, and only walked 3 guys this year too, which is unbelievable. I love it.
Yeah, and apparently his slider has more movement than it has had in the past. So as long as he can fool people with it, they're never going to hit it.
Right,
and then you need Ramos to stop it.
All right. Anyone else you want to feature?
No, I think we've covered everybody doing well and one guy doing bad for a balanced,
right.
You know, balanced view.
Now I want to. We'll talk about this on next episode, so you can actually have a chance to watch it. Everyone, I highly recommend you check out a documentary on Netflix now called the No No Documentary. It's about Doc Ellis and his controversial career. That's a good way to say it, and it also features that amazing 71 Pirates team that I've always known about, but today I just went down a tunnel of Wikipedia and videos, and just that team might be one of the best teams in baseball ever, just from top to bottom.
Colm, I'm gonna watch that. I've seen a snippet of it. I actually saw there was So the famous thing about Doc Ellis that everybody knows is he pitched a no-hitter?
No-hitter in 1971? Is it the same year or 70?
And apparently he was like on LSD during
Correct.
The no-hitter.
Correct.
And so they have him, I guess, in the documentary, they have him tell this story
right.
of the game. Well, there's like a 5-minute YouTube video of him telling the story and it being animated. His tale of the story, like some animators show it. So I've seen that, and that was great. So I'm definitely going to take your advice, and I'm going to check out this Netflix movie. And,
I mean, that team, just to just mention some of the people, Roberto Clemente was just unbelievable that year. I mean, he batted 341 that year, and it was just so good. I mean, Willie Stargell, Dave Cash, Manny Sanguian, just unbelievable. So, yeah, check it out. It's about the hour and 40 minutes, but you think it's like at first when I read it, I was just like, oh, so it's just going to talk about the one no hitter where he's on LSD, but it really talks about his career and the Pirates and then how he went to the Yankees after the Pirates. So yeah, definitely check it out.
I am going to do just that.
All right, everyone. Thank you all for listening. Remember, you can always go to thenationalsreview.com where we have all the articles and there's a lot that we mentioned. We have a gear page so you can get some T-shirts. You want to talk about the...
Get your... I got the Harper home run shirts, the Harper hitting the home run shirts.
The Harper hop.
The Harper hop. There's, you can get your Rendon shirt for when he comes back.
The Buffalo, that's...
The Buffalo one.
That's a good one.
The Curly W. There's right. And any ideas for T-shirts, let me know.
Oh, please send us, yeah. So
if you have an idea and I can turn it into a T-shirt, it's fun for me to play with the graphics and do that anyway. So if you have something you desperately want to see on a T-shirt, let me know and I will try and do my best to make it look pretty.
Great. And you can reach us on Twitter. I'm at Culmination.
I'm at Nationals Review.
And, we're on iTunes. Subscribe to the show. Send us. We love the feedback. And I think Twitter's probably the best way to interact with us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really, every time we tweet out that there's a new podcast, we always get some feedback. So
nice.
Really appreciate it. And keep it coming. And like Colm said, iTunes downloads are good for us.
Yes.
It lets iTunes know that people are listening.
Correct. All right, everyone. So thank you all for listening, and we hope to see you at the park.
See you at the park.